Hi, I'm Michael. I'm a compulsive overeater and an emotional eater. And first, I want to thank Gail for inviting me to come tonight and speak. I feel like it's such an honor. And thank you for allowing me to come and be of service tonight and help my recovery in the process. I usually like to do a quick general Reader's Digest condensed version of what things were like, what happened, and what they're like now. And so I would tell you that I was a person who came here in denial that was hopeless, and I had been killing myself with food. What happened is I came here and got acceptance and love of the fellowship, and people said to me, keep coming back. And they said they would love me until I could learn to love myself. And they followed through with that. They supported me. And that created an environment that was so comfortable for me that I could do this hard work that's become recovery. And today I'm no longer killing myself with food. I'm on the journey. I'm not there yet, wherever there is supposed to be. I have released 240 pounds at this point from my weight of 560 pounds. That means I still have another 100 to go at least. I have to do this one day at a time. My journey is a little different than some others. And maybe you'll find some things that are alike, maybe things that are very different. I don't expect you to expect anything that I say. It's just my story and my opinion sometimes. It's not the policy of OA, but we have all have the same disease. And I'd ask that you look for the commonalities rather than the differences. So I said that I was in denial and killing myself. And when I say I was in denial, I truly never wanted to admit that I was had a problem with food. Never, I mean, and I always did since childhood. It's not unusual in my family. I have a number of relatives. Going back two generations, my grandfather and grandmother on my mother's side were both very large people. When my grandfather passed away when I was a kid, they had to actually build a separate casket for him because he couldn't fit into a normal casket. They had to build they had to take parts of the burial crypt. I live in Louisiana in New Orleans. And we bury people above ground here because if they put people underground, it's waterlogged. They literally had to build a special kind of crypt for him to get in to put his body in. He was so large. And so it's not unusual for me to be around large people. My mother was 5'1" and over 300 pounds. So it's obesity just runs in my family. And I thought it was absolutely normal to be, have weight issues. I was growing bigger and bigger and bigger and never thought it was a problem. Didn't matter if I was getting more, the next 100 pounds. Oh, that wasn't that bad yet. I was 300 pounds when I graduated from high school, practically. But, my thought was, well, I mean, I'm not a size 60 pants yet. So it's not that bad. Kept on going. And then I passed up that 60 inch waist, and well, I'm not 400 pounds yet, am I? So it's not that bad. And kept on going. I usually tell a story about a frog, and it really is very much kind of like my story. And some of you may know this story, but if you do, I ask you to bear with me. There was a man, and he had a frog, and he threw the frog into some tepid water, and the frog swam around. And he took the frog out, and then he threw the frog into some boiling water. And the frog did an amazing thing. He jumped out immediately. He didn't want to boil to death. So the man put him back in some more tepid water again, and he put the pot on the stove and he let the frog swim. And he put the fire on and he got the water just slightly warm. And the frog adjusted. It wasn't boiling. He adjusted. And he thought, okay. And man turned up the heat again. And it got a little hotter. And the frog readjusted to that and he kept on swimming. He thought it was very comfortable. And the man turned up the heat again and it was getting a little warm. But it was just, it wasn't that bad yet. So the frog kept on swimming. And even though he was adjusting and maladjusting and readjusting, didn't matter. And finally, the man turned up the water, the heat so much that the water started to boil. And the frog had lost all of its power and he boiled to death. And I'm very much like that frog in my progressive disease. I don't think it's not that bad. I say, I only have a size 60 inch waist, but I'm not 400 pounds. It's not that bad yet. I get over 400 pounds. Well, I'm not in a size 66 pants. It's not that bad. Pass up that size 66 and I'm ripping out of those pants. And well, I'm only 475 pounds. So where does it stop? When's that boiling point for me? Because if I keep going in my disease, if I'm left to my own devices, I'm going to be like that frog and boil to death. To tell you some of the things that not only was I growing physically larger, and not yeah, hygiene became a real issue for me. I wasn't able to clean myself in normal ways. I worked two jobs. I was a school teacher and I worked with in the public library in New Orleans. And I would stop in between school and my other place, stop and get food from a fast food place or two or three fast food places. And the amount of food that I would eat would make me sick, sometimes to the point where I would couldn't hold it in and I would defecate on myself. I taught part-time at a local university, and I remember rushing to get to the bathroom one time, and in the middle of the hallway to get there, I couldn't make it, and I defecated on the floor. They asked me to leave. I wasn't renewed after that semester of teaching. My illnesses, I guess what? I became diabetic. Imagine that. My blood pressure was shooting up. I started developing all kinds of heart disease issues, and those were in my family. The worst for me was the kidney dysfunction. They were about to put me on dialysis because my kidney function was so low. I started losing mobility. I couldn't take stairs. I needed a cane to walk sometimes, or eventually a walker. I was so often in the hospital that they knew me in the wait emergency room. They knew me by name. They knew what I was there for. I felt like I was on the frequent flyer plan. Had sleep apnea. I was bedridden for a long time. It got so bad that when I was forced to retire, I had to hire caregivers to come live with because I couldn't do it on my own. My family was so concerned when I was hospitalized one time, and my caregivers literally, I mean, they had access to all my debit cards and everything because they do all the shopping. They took my debit cards when I was in the hospital, went and emptied my checking and savings accounts, charged up my credit cards, stole my car, and literally let, while I was in the hospital. There was nothing I could do about it. And I called because I got a text on my phone saying that I was overdrawn in my checking account. I said, I just got paid 2 days ago and my checking account's empty. So I knew something was wrong. Called my sister. They decided that they would have me go live in an assisted living facility because they didn't think I could live on my own anymore. It'd been so long since I'd done that. And emotionally, I was a wreck. I was one a person who, hate, I was really starting to hate people. I was jealous. I was depressed. Oh my goodness, I lost my notes. Hurt all the time. I was hopeless. I doubted anything would work.
That's been 10 minutes.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I was always looking for the worst case to happen. Some people might want to call me a drama queen. I felt like nobody understood me. Oh, poor me. Woe is me. I was isolating all the time. I felt like nobody loved me. Nobody understood me. And boy, did I have resentments and grudges. So what happened? Well, I said, I got that acceptance. You guys came into my life one day and you accepted me. You didn't even know me, but you loved me. You spoke my language. You said that you'd learn to love me until I learned to love myself. And you kept that promise. You know how many people were dying to get rid of me? I had a school principal, and I was an award-winning teacher, but the school principal wanted to get rid of me, because it was rather gross for these kids to have to walk into my classroom. I dealt with so many kids, and they'd complain about the odors in there because I couldn't take care of my hygiene. And then you started teaching me things. Not only did y'all say to keep coming back, and that was felt so unusual, you started teaching me things. So what were the things that you taught me that you let me grow? Well, the first thing you did was said in step one, I had to stop denying things, and I needed to get honest. You told me that I had a choice. I could stay in this disease if I wanted to, as long as I want to. But that it would be insanity to stay in it and do nothing. So, and listening to you talk, I got hope. Then when you said to me, you're gonna have to try trust a higher power. You can make up that higher power you want, but let him do it. So it stopped the progression for the first time. You said to me, some days, Michael, you're gonna have to be uncomfortable. You're gonna have to stop that eating over feelings. You're going to have to stop eating over the feelings. The feelings aren't going to kill you. They're temporary. But the food will kill you if you stay with it. I didn't like that lesson because food had been my friend. He told me that I need to grow up. I needed to learn to be an adult. I was 66 years old. In my second house, I'd finished a career of teaching. And you still tell me I need to grow up because emotionally I was that immature. You told me that I had to deal with those emotions. And Lord be so many other things. You told me, oh God, you know which one was another one? You're not a human garbage can, Michael. You are not a human garbage can. Just because there's more food on the plate, if you're full, you can stop. If you're fixing food and I cook for myself, and there's a little bit left in a box, and you weighed and measured your amount, and there's a little bit left, that doesn't mean you get to finish the box just so you don't have to deal with putting the box away. You're going to have another box of that same food again. So the next time you use that product, start off measuring the food from there and then finish with the new box instead of just finishing off the box. What a concept. If I'm going to weigh and measure, keep it simple and weigh and measure. Don't give yourself extra because there's just a little bit extra. Or don't say, oh, well, there's a half a cup of blueberries. And I'm sorry if I'm saying things I shouldn't. And take about another handful to pop in my mouth. I had to learn to stop going to eat in between meals. I had to stop having foods in between my jobs because that food was making me sick. And then I would do things that would like do combinations of food that just the body couldn't even take. So I started this process of getting a food plan, following it, calling a sponsor, talking to him every day. And things began to change just a little at a time. And he said, start focusing on the program and the the steps. And guess what? The weight started to drop off. And the doctor said, "What's going on with you? Your health is getting better." My diabetes started going down, my blood sugar level. It's gone down so much these days that I don't even have to take any medicines. I don't take insulin. I don't take any pills, anything. It's just my own. It's just me on my own with my food. I have an A1C of 5.1. My doctor's like, "Okay." The high blood pressure. Oh, I'm off of those medicines too. The heart disease. My heart's in better shape than it's been in the past 20 years. My doctor's thrilled with, my cardiologist is thrilled with that. Remember that kidney dysfunction where they were ready to put me on dialysis? My kidney function has tripled. Tripled. I'm nowhere near dialysis. I'm near the top of where I should be. The mobility issues of being in a wheelchair or in a walker with a cane. I can walk around my house without any of those things. When I go outside, I do take a walker because I have to change terrains, and I'm still not 100% sure of it. I don't have to worry about a caretaker being here with me. I live by myself. My brother and sister wanted to put me into a nursing home. I said, "I need 3 months to say goodbye to my house before you put me away." And I really needed that. And 3 months later, they came and said, "Okay, I'm ready to move if y'all are." They said, "Nope. You're doing so well on your own to surprise us. Why don't you just stay? Let's see if we can do this another year." And one day at a time, I learned to take care of myself. I had to grow up. I haven't mastered stairs yet again, but those are coming. I do use a cane every now and then, and I think I could do it. I haven't been in the hospital in a year and a half this time. I was there so often. Between 2 calendar years, I spent 9 months either in a hospital or a nursing home. That's how often I was there. And I haven't been there in over a year and a half now. I don't have sleep apnea anymore. I'm not using the machine. My family is just thrilled with me. My doctors are thrilled with me. I've learned to love myself. It's amazing. Didn't ever think that I'd do this stuff. You all gave me room to grow. You also gave me permission to make mistakes because I'm not going to do it perfectly the first time. And I don't have to beat myself up if I don't make it through the first time. Is there a message in this? I don't know. I know I'm not killing myself anymore with food. And so I'm so grateful for that. It's unbelievable. There's times that I feel uncomfortable, but I don't have to use food for it. I have a God squad. It's five guys. If something is wrong, I can get on the phone and text them. We tech have a text string. If I don't get one of them, I'll call the next one. And if they're not there, I get the third one until I get somebody. And if none of them are available, I still have the other fellows in the program. I do a lot of service because you know what? Service takes me out of myself and my selfish issues. I never realized that service was could really be a tool. I know we were saying it's a tool, but it dawned on me in the past few days just how much it was. I've really been wanting to eat. I'm in New Orleans. It's Mardi Gras. Today is Carnival. We have special foods here for that. There's a dessert that I love. And it's killed me not to have it sometimes in the last 3 years. It's okay. It's just a food, but I want it. And Saturday, I really wanted it. And I was about to convince myself to go. And you know what I said? You can't do honest service if you do that, Michael. You can't. I see the clock. I'm winding up. Thanks, Laura. You can't do service. I'm getting ready to help with the virtual convention. I can't chair the help desk for that if I'm eating and compulsively. I can't come here and talk if I'm not abstinent. I can't do the service that I'm going to do. The service kept me. I mean, I called my sponsor, and he said, "Well, are you praying?" And he asked me all the right questions, what's causing all of this, but I just realized how much service got me out of myself to do that, just keep me absent. I want to thank you for I just for being here for me for my recovery. And I hope if anyone is new, that you got a message of hope that if it is possible for me, someone who was 560 pounds and just, knocking on death's door. The doctor told me I had less than 2 weeks left to live at one point. It's 2.5, 3 years later, I'm still here. I guess my higher power, God, has other plans for me. I don't know what they are yet. It's okay. But you gave me hope, and it's time for me to pass it on. And I hope that my message has brought a little bit of hope. Thank you for allowing me to share. That's
Thank you, Michael, for a beautiful talk. Okay.